Welcome to another of our European Crucible podcasts, where we talk to people who've participated in the European version of Crucible, which brings together researchers from different fields and different places of study and gets them to find out about each other and maybe even find out there's common ground which they can potentially dig into together. In the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to discover a little about their own areas of research, about what they put into and got out of the Crucible experience, and perhaps most importantly, about what they're all doing together in their collaborative project, which evolved out of their involvement with Crucible. If all that is not entirely clear now, and I can well see that it might not be, I pretty much guarantee it will be in 20 minutes. And today, that collaborative project we're going to focus on is something called Autodose. We'll get onto what that stands for after we get our three Autodose members to say a little bit about themselves, starting with Helena.
Hi, thanks. I'm Helena Knevelsrud. I'm an associate professor at the University of Oslo. I am working on the process of autophagy that we can talk about a bit more, using fruit flies to understand how autophagy is regulated.
See, I've learned not to pronounce it autophagy, which I've done every on the rare occasions I've used that word down the years, you see. So that's one lesson learned.
Okay. Both are good. Yeah.
That's good to know. So you're studying autophagy with Drosophila, and autophagy, Now that would mean something like self-eating or self-feeding. What does it exactly mean?
Yeah, that's correct. Self-eating, it is a process that occurs in all the cells in our bodies. So within each cell, the cell needs to degrade and get rid of and recycle components that are no longer needed, or it can be kind of the trash of the cell, or it can be even harmful components that needs to be recycled. And then the components can be reused by the cell for a cell to stay healthy.
So just like all of us are getting better at recycling and making use of what previously would have been waste, you're looking at ways of doing that with it on a cellular basis.
That's correct.
And one other little detail we perhaps should clarify is when you joined Eurocrucible, you were at the Oslo University Hospital. So this is a new position you're in now.
That's right. So I was at the Oslo University Hospital, and then I got recruited to the University of Oslo and started as an associate professor in January. So that's good news since the start of the Crucible, me join the Crucible program.
Good. I'm sure it's a direct result. No, let's not push that hypothesis. Okay. second, Dr. Ben Swallow.
Hi, thank you very much. So yeah, I'm currently a lecturer assistant professor at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. I'm a statistician by background. So my job revolves around building mathematical and computational representations of the real world systems that we're interested in studying and understanding in greater detail. So for the example of the autophagy project that we're working on, rather than doing a lot of the complex and difficult stuff that Helena does in often expensive experiments, we try and represent these cellular systems in terms of mathematical equations, which we can then study on a computer, which will hopefully then give us better understanding of what really goes on in the cells themselves.
That, of course, it will only work if your model represents the dynamic process that you're attempting in the real world.
Absolutely, yeah. So we try and use these equations that are able to change through time or across space or across the whole of the cellular structures. We account for variation across different cells, try and using the data that Helena is able to collect to inform those processes and hopefully build models which are good representations of the reality.
Give us another example beyond the Autodose project of the sort of things you're attempting to model.
Yeah, so a lot of the work that I've done over the last few years has been in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, so trying to understand what the drivers of the disease has been, what important underlying factors relating to different patients might drive those differences that we see, how interventions that were introduced by governments were effective or not, as the case may be, and better understanding how we might be able to tackle and improve patient responses in terms of outcomes in relation to the pandemic.
Right, one more member of the team is Dr. Martha Vardaki.
Hello, this is me. I'm a postdoctoral research fellow at the National Hellenic Research Foundation. This is based in Athens. I'm also teaching at the University of Ioannina. And my main expertise is Raman spectroscopy. So this is not to be confused with ramen, the noodles. It's actually based on the Raman effect, which, if I can very shortly elaborate, is when you're actually shining a laser onto a sample or anything. And then a very, very small amount of the light is being reflected back in a slightly different color. And we are trying to collect this color. It's a very, very weak effect. And this color is actually consisting of the fingerprint, the molecular fingerprint of the sample that we have illuminated. And this is going to be very useful to study Helen's samples and also combine with Ben's statistics expertise.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves and talk about that in terms of autodose, but what are you using it for? What are actually you using Raman spectroscopy for at the National Hellenic Research Foundation?
So over the past 10 years, which is not only like the my current position, I've done a few postdocs around the world, but I was always using Raman spectroscopy for biological applications. So that means essentially biological fluids. We're looking at blood or urine of patients, like cancer patients or even healthy donors. Or we're looking at tissues from animals or, again, patients or cell cultures. And we are picking up the way that the chemical bonds vibrate inside the molecules of those samples, which are very characteristic to the sample, again.
If I've understood you right, that might be something like looking for early markers of cancer or distinguishing between what is healthy or not completely healthy.
Yeah, exactly. Or right. Even when we're talking about biological processes, it might mean that we're looking at different times of it. So like different stages through the time, which can differentiate between each other.
And how did you, Helena, how did you come to be involved with Eurocrucible?
I am actually now an alumni member of the Young Academy of Norway. And the Young Academy of Norway then got the invitation to the Eurocrucible and also to suggest people to join. But I thought it was such a great program that I also applied myself and very happy to have had that opportunity.
Good. Okay. Martha, same question for you.
I just came across it on Twitter, to be honest, because European Crucible, I mean, it's an amazing initiative, but it's not as well known here in Greece at all. And I've just come back from Europe like a couple of years ago, and I was trying to form collaborations across Europe. And that was actually an amazing opportunity for me.
And Ben, Eurocrucible tends to attract quite a lot of people in Scotland, so it's perhaps less surprising to find you in the gang.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, my involvement had come through. We'd received an email about the scheme sent round colleagues at the university, and it sounded great. So as it turned out, one of my more senior colleagues had done a Scottish-specific version of the Crucible during her early career. I found it very useful and led on to some great things for her. So I'd sort of been given a previous attendee as a success story. So I was very keen to apply and was grateful to receive the place on the scheme.
And what were the practicalities of participating online? Because it's traditionally been a face-to-face event, but obviously it's had to evolve for our current times.
Yeah, I think that's always a bit of a challenge. I mean, we hadn't had the experience of the face-to-face, so we just had to make the best of what we had. And I think after 3 years of COVID, we were fairly used to doing a lot of our work through a computer screen. So I don't think it was too challenging from that perspective.
In comparison to other online meetings or hybrid events, European Crucible was actually really well organized and efficient, even if it was online. That was really surprising to me.
We got a lot out of those 4 days, I think it was. And, you know, suddenly we have a new contact across Europe. Yeah, I'm also really impressed with how efficient it was.
Oh, great. New contacts and new collaborators. So how did you three find each other? I'm guessing the speed networking part of it was involved.
Yeah, that's correct. I think we all had individual meetings with this speed collaborator where we had a very short period of time of trying to come up with a research project. I'd previously been doing some work on a tangential biological system, which I thought was quite pertinent to what Helena was talking about. And also Martha and I had a good discussion about her approaches to data collection, which I kind of saw as being quite collaborative and interesting for us as well. So for after the discussions, I followed up with Helena, and there was a suggestion that we get Martha involved as well, and it sort of stemmed from there, really.
But Helena, isn't that the real challenge? Because you've met, obviously, these two really interesting people, but you've also met a lot of other really interesting people. How do you go, these are the ones I want to collaborate with, rather than any of the other possibilities that were dangled before you?
Yeah, that was a challenge, and maybe there is more opportunities for future collaborations across the Crucible participants. But I think that it kind of stood out to me that, as Ben said, he has worked on similar questions before, and the tools that he has were exactly the kind of things I was looking for in terms of the questions we're trying to address. And also with Martha, so it's like for the autophagy process, we're currently so dependent on specific markers. So these fluorescing proteins that are expressed is a very typical way of detecting it. And that is sometimes difficult because detecting this marker may not really be the actual autophagy process. So with Raman spectroscopy, maybe we can have different approach at detecting autophagy in time and space.
Martha, is that how you realized that you had a very useful part to play in this?
Yeah, absolutely. Because Raman spectroscopy usually comes in the cases where there's a technique or an approach which is usually invasive or can interrupt the biological process. And because Raman is minimally invasive, I mean, you just shine a light on the sample and then you're collecting the reflected light back. We tend to use it when we don't want to disturb the samples very much. And I think we thought it's a very good combination or a very good match, my technique with the project that Helen and Ben wanted to put together.
So Ben, you've got good collaborators. You've got the sense that there's something you can do for each other. How did it evolve into what we now call autodose? And I should say, by the way, I thought the word autodose was familiar to me, and I looked it up, and it's a type of Samsung washing machine, as you may or may not know.
I did not know that. So yeah, we may have to reconsider if we're going to do any patent work from this. But I think for us, what we thought about was my experience as working in statistics and mathematics is often we sort of stay in our offices, we develop these models, and then we go out and try and find some nice data that might be able to apply our approaches to. Or sometimes it comes the other way, that interesting scientists come to us and say, we've got these data, what can we do with them? And I think the challenge then is often either the approach we developed isn't necessarily overly useful to the other scientists, or the data that the scientists have collected might not be able to answer the questions because of the way it's been collected, might not answer the questions that they're actually interested in. So what we wanted to try and do was kind of build this more integrated approach where we sort of do things in parallel, so that the data collection is done at the same time as the model development, so we can make sure that both the statistical approach, the data collection, and the biological questions are all integrated together to ensure that what we get out of it is actually meaningful, rather than just combining disparate components. So I think the first stages has really just been communicating with each other, finding common languages, working out what's the current state of affairs in each of our different areas, and then trying to merge that into something meaningful collectively.
And Helena, can you just be clear about what's the actual goal here? What are you trying to achieve? What would the dream solution be?
Yeah, the dream is really to understand how autophagy is changing in time and space. And if we can develop the Raman spectroscopy as a method to really detect that, and have then the statistical part also help us design better experiments. So maybe with the statistical testing, we will know which hypotheses are likely not correct, but we can also then more test directly in vivo in the fruit flies which hypothesis we should really follow. And then the goal is, of course, more overall for us to understand how autophagy is beneficial for human health. So maybe in the future, you'd want to modulate autophagy in different disease contexts. And then it would be important to know how does this work within the tissue, within different cells. Do they all respond at the same time, different times, or in different ways? And that for that, we need both the tools and the knowledge.
So although this is very much in the far future, there is that possibility that by better understanding autophagy and the processes and the reasoning behind it, we may better understand some diseases and be better able to control or prevent them. I'm stressing, though, a long way off.
That's right. It's actually already known that autophagy is important in the context of neurodegeneration. Or in cancer, also metabolic diseases, or either preventing development of these diseases or that it has them. So there's definitely possibilities in the future to understand and maybe intervene on certain diseases.
And when you say neurodiseases, are we talking about things like dementia?
Yeah, that would be dementia. Like in different neurodegenerative diseases that lead to dementia, then it is... misfolded proteins typically that are a problem, and these can be taken care of by autophagy. So autophagy could be a way to limit this.
And Martha, where are you at with autodose now? And realistically, how much of your time can you all contribute to this? Because obviously you've got your day jobs as well.
Yeah, of course we do. This is academia, to be honest. You do have projects, and you do have projects that you usually like a lot. But you tend to spend time on that, even out of your hours, or even in your hours. The good thing is that we did get a small seed funding to allocate somewhere to a couple of students under our supervision. So that makes, life a bit easier and work. Ben can probably talk more on that. Now, in terms of where we are about to start measuring, to start recording some Raman measurements once the samples are being shipped to my place. But all this time, Ben and Helen were working with each other to process some of Helen's fluorescence data. I think maybe they can talk more on that.
Ben, so state of play is what? You need to get your stuff and Helena's stuff over to Martha, do you?
Yes, that's right. So the idea is that Helena develops or creates these fly cells that we can then study using Martha's spectroscopy. So at the moment, we've ordered the necessary specific equipment that's required for that, and that's currently being shipped out.
Helena will then... them.
You've received them. Excellent.
Yeah.
So then the next step is for the samples to be produced, and then we'll send those to Martha to do the analysis. At the same time, I've had a summer student working with me at St. Andrews this year using the kind of the current state of the art fluorescence data that Helena talked about earlier, and trying to understand how we could use statistical approaches to try and understand, predict, and mathematically model the data currently. The idea being then, once we get the data from Martha that she's created through the spectroscopy, we can then see how those models need to be adjusted accordingly for the new data.
So Helena, I've joined you at a kind of key point here. You're just about to go from we've got the first bit of work done to actually getting the data out of Martha, which could send you off in the next direction.
That's right. Yeah. We need to prepare these samples. So it's from fruit flies. So I'm actually going to then cross some fruit flies to get the right genotypes that we have planned out. So we'll have some that have high autophagy and some that lack autophagy. And then we have to dissect out the right tissues and mount them and send it to Martha.
And deep freeze them probably and then send them to me. Yeah.
As long as the Greek Postal Service don't object to a large consignment of dead flies, I suppose that could go wrong there.
Yeah, we have to be careful what we put on the label, but yeah.
Finally, I want to bring you back to your overview of the whole Crucible experience, because you've come a long way from when you gathered together before you even met each other. How did it feel to each of you? And I'll start with Ben.
Yeah, I think it's overall been a very successful experience. I'm hoping that, as you say, this is a crux moment, and we'll definitely have some more to show for this going forward. The funding has allowed us to kind of do this initial work, which we might have struggled to be able to do otherwise. And the idea then is hopefully to build this up and look at larger scale funding that we might be able to build this project further and support our own research over the next few years.
And beyond this, the autodose project, though, do you think that what you've learned or gleaned at Eurocrucible is going to filter into your day-to-day life as a researcher?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've always been very, you know, collaborative in mind in terms of the work that I do, but it's really helped extend the networks further in terms of thinking about how we can better work together in terms of putting us under pressure in that networking session to really think about how we might build research projects together and perhaps with colleagues that we might not necessarily naturally have reached out to in other circumstances.
Martha, has Eurocrucible helped you get an even greater appreciation of multidisciplinary collaborating?
Yeah, of course. I always had a great appreciation about it. I'm a pharmacist by training and I have to be working with physicists. But of course, it was like really useful. And I really believe that there's no way to make excellent research if you don't work with other people from different fields. This is a strong belief of mine.
Helena?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Ben and Martha said. It's been a really successful experience. And this funding has really helped us to kickstart something that I hope will be very successful and that we can pursue in the future. So applying for other funding sources for larger grants.
And if anyone's listening to this, thinking of applying for a next iteration of Eurocrucible, what would you each say to them? Helena?
Just go and do it. Don't even think about it.
Yes, go for it and expect that you'll be surprised to find, positively surprised to find many new collaborators.
Ben?
Yeah. Third repetition of exactly what's just been said. I think it's very successful. And it's opened up various doors for me. So I would highly recommend it.
Technically, since I'm among scientists, I'll say that was only the second repetition, but I won't let you get away with the with a miscount.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Ben, for putting up with my pedantry. That was Dr. Ben Swallow, Assistant Professor at the University of St. Andrews. You also heard from Dr. Helena Eknavelsrud. That may not be 100% authentic Norwegian pronunciation, who is now an associate professor at the University of Oslo, and Martha Vardaki, among other things, postdoctoral research fellow at the National Hellenic Research Foundation in Athens. Collectively, they are Project Autodose, which is a sort of acronym standing for Autophagy, Dynamic Optimization, Statistical Learning and Experimental Design. If you've not had already enough of an autodose of European Crucible, there are four more of these podcasts. And if you found this, you can probably find them. Thanks for listening.